The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, how much of what you believe is truth and how much is lie? Since most societies are founded on lies, it is... Did you hear what I said? Since most societies are founded on lies... Now that I've said that, let's take a moment because I hear some protest. Now wait just a minute, hold on. No, it is not true that the majority is always right. No, it is not true that 60,000 people can't be wrong. The sign outside of Dallas many, many years ago that said 60,000 people can't be wrong. No, it is not true that X number of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even millions cannot be wrong. As a matter of fact, you don't believe that at all. What you do believe is that tens upon tens of uncounted millions of human beings are just as wrong as they can be. I mean, literally as upside down as if they were living on the other side of the world from you, and some of them are. In Russia, in China, in other countries with totally different concepts of philosophy, music, religion, art, history. History is taught completely differently. On different sides of the ocean, within different schools in the same nation, within different classrooms in the same school, and is highly interpreted to the point it even gets into different minds in the same classroom in two totally different ways. So wait just a minute. I said, since most societies, I probably ought to just say since society is founded on lies. It is virtually futile to separate lies from truth within any given society. Even though I think it ought to be done. Why futile? Well, simply because the shattering process of exposing the myths in our own mind can be so disruptive it's tantamount to complete ego destruction. And that destroys the human being to have his ego deflated in most cases. It shouldn't. It's supposed to be the first step toward really becoming a mature human being, according to the Bible. But some people can't stand ego destruction. When ego is gone, so is the blanket and the thumb in the mouth. So is everything that has always been real, that is meaningful, that is that particular place of comfort into which you creep when some challenging new thought or something to come along to disrupt your own particular mental processes destroys the entire way in which you think and feel and say and do. We have our defenses, and they're far more accurate than any of the DEW line, than any radar set, than any advanced early missile system you ever heard about. And that advanced warning message of ours is, the minute some kind of a probe comes into our mind that we might be wrong, I mean wrong about anything from a philosophic, a religious, a political, a historical point of view to the choice of the necktie for that morning or the amount of sugar you're putting on your cereal, we've got a defense mechanism that says, no, we are not wrong, we are right. But, you know, we might be wrong. It's possible. And that very thought, all by itself, is one which is absolutely resisted by most human beings. Most people resist the profound shock of acknowledging error, of admitting myths and untruth in their minds that they have clung to, that they have come to believe in, by all these defense mechanisms, and usually when all other attempts, when all other defenses have been exhausted, we are left with only one tired old excuse. Just who do you think you are? That to us is the perfect squelch. That's the perfect put down. I mean, when somebody is arguing about anything from the amount of mileage you get in your new little lightweight automobile down to the exigencies of certain business discussions or decisions, down to tax rebates or personal health, or whether you're better off to find a whole worm or a half a worm in your apple. We have all kinds of arguments, and we are ready. But when those arguments finally run out, and we run into somebody who's got all these other arguments that seem to batter our arguments down, we finally just blow up, get angry, and say, just who do you think you're talking to? Or we say, who do you think you are, or where did you get your authority? And so then we carefully consider the source, put the source down, and go comfortably on our way, clinging to our myths. Sir Winston Churchill once said, some men sometimes stumble over the truth. But they usually pick themselves up and hurry on as if nothing had happened. People use the statement, "Why, he'd tell a lie when the truth would do better." That's a put down to the windbag whose bory stories are known to everyone in the community and who is absolutely notorious for the monotony of his well-known ego trips that are stiflingly boorish to people to have to listen to. But that's the way we talk about one another. We say, "Why, he'd lie when the truth would do better." The point seems to be that once in a while, some people believe the truth would literally do better than a lie. But you know, millions would argue that point, and probably in dozens of languages. Because lying, omitting the truth, leaving out important details, exaggerating, distorting, hedging with the facts, falsely implying, using anything from body English to the eye, to state misleading or erroneous thoughts, concepts, or words, the smoothly done, casually accomplished false story, that's part of society. It's part of your history. It's part of the history you believe in your personal history. It's part of your life. It comes all the way from nursery rhymes to cherished little songs in school and church. You believe in your myths about your national heroes, no matter which country in which you live. And mostly they are myths, all the way back from some of the major names, such as the Atlantic Ocean or the continent of Europe, which comes from pure mythology. But these myths about history, about sex, about money, about health, about religion, about diet, and myths even about our myths, are a part of society, and they are clung to with a jealousy, with a love, with almost an obsession that is impossible to pry loose. And when you tell people a little bit of truth, those defense mechanisms go into force and effect immediately, and as I said, they're far more effective than any DEW line in detecting a communist missile on its way. How did you come to believe the things you do? I mean about anything from classical music to literature to history to art. Well, you are, and I am, and we all are, the sum total of all the experiences, the quote knowledge end quote, that's a moot word, which has come into our minds since our birth through the five senses. Everything you know, you learn. You accumulated it. You were taught it. Now, today, if you're a middle-aged person, elderly, maybe you're even a young 25, 30, 35-year-old wage earner, hopefully, maybe not one of those millions who are out of a job, but you probably have only the dimmest recollections of some of your earlier education. Just exactly how you learned the alphabet, except the little songs. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, remember? But you've forgotten all the rest of it. You may remember having to learn the Dewey Decimal System, and they introduced you to something called a library. Maybe you remember the story about the germ. You learned about human anatomy by the story of two little microbes taking a trip through your esophagus. Maybe you remember the story about blood corpuscles, white and red, like little dishes carrying food to parts of your body. But even though you remember vaguely some of those experiences from elementary school, from junior high and high school, maybe even later reading, it's all rather a vague blob in your memory. Many people who go right straight out of high school or even drop out of high school right into a job who begin to labor and work with their hands only receive the very most tentative basis for further, quote, knowledge, end quote. Now, these are people of society. There are people called hard hats and rednecks all the way to hippies and ultra-liberals. There are people who cling to different notions just as their medallions cling to their neck. There are people who can believe anything and everything at every opposite spectrum of the truth or of the lie that has been told either down through history or is being spouted from soapboxes in convenient public parks all over the United States or any other country today. But the point is, where do you stand in the midst of all of this? If somebody tells you Paul Revere was a coward who ran instead of being a hero to go warn, what would you immediately believe? Would you want to research that to find out? Or would your defense mechanism say, no, it is better to believe a myth if it is a good myth than it is to destroy our myths, which would end up in turn destroying ourselves? You were told as a child, that pigs and wolves have discussions about hair on their chinny-chin-chin, boil water, come toppling down the chimney, and are roasted alive. You read stories about the unbelievable orgy of two little German kids not only eating the eaves and then the shakes on the roof, but finally the door jam, the entirety of the house, and then ended up in the unbelievable horror story, if you think some of the stuff you see today in our movies is wild, of boiling, or in this case, broiling, the witch who inhabited the candy house alive. A little German tale came out of the Black Forest, I guess, somewhere, called Hansel und Gretel. You know, we were told these things as kids. We even see some of the fantasies of motion pictures today. And so people believe animals talk, get Twitter-pated, have love affairs, and are generally of a far higher order than human beings. Granted, some human beings act like a lower order than some animals, but the truth is a little different than that. No, ducks are not fully clothed when they have a little jacket on. As a matter of practical fact, they look all the more naked, but then we're accustomed to it by seeing the cartoonist pen at work. There are myths, you know, in your background about the history of your nation, even probably about your personal history, about life, about heroes, sex, money, health, diet, religion, and even myths about some of our own myths. The question is, how do you believe, discover, and then really believe in the truth? And are you brave enough to face it if you do find the truth? Long ago, Jesus Christ of Nazareth said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." But people argue about what is the truth. And that's a brand new thing. You know, there's a song even Johnny Cash sings that's not really a well-known song now, some years ago, and I don't know how well that particular record did. But a lot of people back then heard Johnny Cash singing about the lonely voice of youth cries, "What is truth?" No, the words weren't, "What is the truth?" It was, "What is truth?" Jesus said in chapter 17 of the book of John, the Gospel of John, in verse 17, "Thy word is truth," saying that the Bible is truth. But now, you can get an argument immediately. What am I saying? You can get a fight, not just an argument, when you tell people the Bible represents truth, the truth about what you are, whether or not there is a God. If so, what is his nature? What about the Godhead, the God family? Is there a purpose or a program being worked out here below on this earth? Is there a reason for human existence? Is there a reason for the old world going around after all? And do you have a part in that great purpose? People have been arguing over those questions they call the unanswerable for years and years, for decades, for centuries, and still haven't come up with the answers. Jesus said, "Thy word is truth." But now there we got another great giant problem, haven't we? Because there are hundreds of organizations that claim to believe in the Bible, and yet they argue about what the Bible means. So it seems to the average layman, as you look around the world at all the different philosophies, religions, political points of view, opinions on everything from health to the aging process to the origin of man, that you are completely defeated before you even begin, because there's no reason to find out the truth, because once you discover what you think is the truth, it's only what your mind is willing to accept as the truth, and not necessarily the truth, but it's what becomes the truth to you. Jesus was on trial for his life, and Pilate wanted to question him privately. That's found in the 18th chapter of the book of John. And Pilate began to say, "Look, they're calling you the King of the Jews. What do you say for yourself? Are you the King of the Jews or not?" That would be tantamount to defying the Roman laws, defying the Roman government, and he would be condemning himself with his own mouth, and very likely Pilate would have even intervened. But at least Pilate is wanting now to ask him specifically about what is this furor. So he enters into the judgment hall at verse 33, the 18th chapter of John, and he called Jesus and said, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And Jesus said, "Are you saying these words of yourself? Is this your own idea, or did somebody put you up to it? Is it something somebody else told you?" And Pilate says, What am I, a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What is it you have done? And Jesus said, My kingdom is not of this time, of this age, of this society. That's what he meant, because the Greek word for world is cosmos. It means society. If my kingdom were of this time, of this order of things, of this society, then my servants would fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now, my kingdom is not from here. Pilate said, Well, are you a king then? And Jesus answered, Because you see, in the Greek language, you are a king then is more or less the way he would have said it. Well, a king you are then, something of that nature, which in our English language it is rather confused in the old King James English. You don't get it, otherwise you can't understand Jesus' retort. He said, Are you a king then? Jesus said, You say that I am a king. So it was more in the affirmative than in the interrogative or the question. And he said, To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate then made that famous statement, What is truth? Notice what Pilate said. He didn't say, What is the truth? He didn't use the article. He said, What is truth? Now, why would Pilate, as the top Roman military man in that area of Judea, actually able to intervene in what was almost patterned after the Persian satrapies of a type of a puppet state, but trying not to intervene, trying to allow the Jewish Sanhedrin and the religious hierarchy to have full sway and full control over that society, hoping that that would be the best way to keep them tranquil and productive, because Rome was interested in keeping all the subjugated people under the heel and under the boot, and they would rather have them calm and placid and happy, and at least within limited areas, governing themselves. Pilate didn't want an uprising. He didn't want virtual civil war. And no matter what Jesus had done, Pilate was rather going to stand by and let the Jews handle the question themselves. But he was a product of a very up-to-the-moment modern intellectual community. The Roman government fancied itself the answer to all of man's dreams. They did. They ushered into the world and were succeeding at that moment in history with what Hitler tried to do. They ruled the known world. The Caesar was not just looked upon as human alone, but was looked upon by millions of Romans as God-man, was deified, and was called by names such as divinity. In their ultra-liberated society, with fantastic advances in literature, in science of the day, sculpture, we still have them to look at today, they had a civilization, a society that was going to grant and to bequeath to the rest of the world peace. It was called Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, to give it to all of the rest of society, even if they had to kill them to do so. The idea was, you're going to have peace if we got to kill you to bring it to you. You know, because people who were lying there dead with their arms folded and a daisy clutched in their now rigid rigor mortis hand are peaceful. This is the way Romans looked at it. So they were going to give all the world these wonderful ideas they had. Now, you'll get a little bit of a glimpse into the literature of the time, even by statements of the Apostle Paul and by statements written in the Bible about their poets, about the Areopagites who loved to tell and to hear some new thing, about their philosophers, homosexuals, yes, deviants, yes, perverts, sure, but philosophers nevertheless, and some of those very same minds are the very basis of modern-day psychology and philosophy. Some of the great writings of the ancient Romans are even today marveled at in big universities. Now, Pilate was a product of his day, and I'm merely submitting to you that we've come the full cycle, that we're not quite as modern as we think, because here we are with modern people, liberated people, the intellectual intelligentsia of the communities who believe in skepticism, where a divine, all-wise creator God is concerned, who might accept evolution or might simply be agnostic and say, I can't know. I don't know. Hooray, I'm ignorant. They don't put it that way, but they say, I can't know. And people seem to feel that that deserves accolade to say, I'm ignorant, I really don't know the answer, that really puts you a step above your fellow man because you're smarter than he is. You don't know what he says he knows. But I can get in an argument with people on that too, so I better get back to what I was talking about. The point is that Pilate was a product of that society, and his question to Jesus was a very modern question. It could be a question put to a moderator of a talk show on national television today. What is truth? Not what is the truth. What is truth? When he had said this, he went out to the Jews and he said, I can't find any fault with him at all. But you've got a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Who do you want? Would you that I release unto you the king of the Jews? And they said, no, don't release him. Release this other guy, Barabbas. And they made a movie about that. So you know the story, perhaps. But maybe you didn't know that Jesus said, thy word is truth, and that he came to reveal the word which he called truth. In the beginning chapter of that book of John, this gospel that is called gospel, are a few statements of truth. I doubt very much if the average person believes them. I doubt when the average person hears them, they will believe them. I doubt the average person who doesn't believe them will take the trouble to find out whether they are true. As a matter of fact, I doubt if many of the major religions believe the simple statement, needing no interpretation, in the first opening verses of the Gospel according to John, as it's called, in man's way of reckoning it at least. Because it says, chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning was the Word. Now right there you got an argument. Because science says in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. And science doesn't like religionists to come along and say in the beginning was the Word. They say, now wait a minute, you can't say words like that. That's unscientific. You got to have a beginning. And you can't say there was something in the beginning because you got to start with nothing. But science starts with laws, with energy, with the existence of matter, with the existence of the atom and of the nuclei, of all the laws that have to do with the virtual little universe that each atom is supposed to be. They begin with this point because they've got to begin with something rather than nothing. And so leading scientific textbooks, as they initiate young impressionable minds into the idea of evolution as being the alternative for divine creation, will say in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. And then they proceed on to the Big Bang theory, the oscillating universe theory, or the other theories for the origin of creation without a creator, the existence of law without a lawgiver, and all the rest of it. But many people won't believe in the beginning was the Word. And the word Word is capitalized with a W because it says the Word was with God and the Word was God. Now it means in the Greek word, spokesman. It has to do with the Greek word, L-O-G-O-S. We hear of the word logo. We call it that for a television program, for example, the logo, where you have the announcement as to what the program is. The announcer gives you the logo, the beginning or the ending of a program. And it comes from a Greek word that is spelled L-O-G-O-S. In the beginning was that spokesman, or the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him. All right, a statement that this Word, whatever that is, was a personality, and that all things were made by Him. And without Him was not anything made that was made. Now the Bible talks of the creation not only of the earth and of all life upon it, but the universe, the heavens, laws, energies, forces, and the sustaining of all things, and says that it's all sustained by the power of God. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not, seemingly an allusion to stupidity or ignorance, lack of knowledge, as opposed to a ray of light. And the darkness doesn't understand, doesn't comprehend that light. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness of the light. Now the word light begins to be capitalized, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light. John wasn't that light, it says, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lights every man that comes into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. Now, who is that talking about? Well, very plainly, the answer comes Verse 11, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Then comes one of Dr. Billy Graham's favorite scriptures. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. Who's that talking about? Jesus Christ of Nazareth. But do you realize what you just heard read? It says, in the beginning was the Word. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. You have just heard a few verses out of the first chapter of the Gospel of John, which are neither understood, nor believed, nor accepted by multiple millions of people in major church denominations who do not believe that the one who did the creating, who is revealed through the Old Testament, who is the God of the Old Testament, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who wrote the Ten Commandments with his own finger, who was in that pillar of smoke by day and the column of fire by night with the Israelites in the wilderness, who is the very great being who came down and wrestled in the dust of the earth with ancient, aged Jacob, is Jesus Christ of the New Testament. Yet there it is in your Bible, needing no translation, no interpretation, just a plain statement. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It goes on to say in verse 14, here it is, you don't need it interpreted, just listen to what it says, and let's see if we can batter down our defense mechanisms and say, now no matter the way it appears to me, it doesn't change what I eat, doesn't change what time I'm going to get up tomorrow, doesn't change what I believe about my national heroes for the moment, my diet for the moment. It doesn't change anything except a rather distant philosophical and very historical thought that all we're talking about changing, letting a little bit of knowledge come into our minds as opposed to myth. And it says, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. That is plainly saying that this Word, who was in the beginning with God, and who was God, and who made all things, is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. So the Bible plainly says that the pre-existence of Jesus as a man involved being the executive member, the spokesman of the Godhead, that Jesus of the New Testament, stand by for this because it's going to really challenge your mind, is the God of the Old Testament. Defense mechanisms working? Why don't you write for this booklet called The Real Jesus? And we also will have article material coming along on the question of the pre-existence of Jesus Christ. You ought to write for The Plain Truth, a challenging publication coming out twice as often with twice the impact. It gives you the true overview of world conditions in the light of Bible prophecy and in the light of the Gospels. This new series I've begun on the subject of the Gospels, wading through them verse by verse, chapter by chapter, book by book, and I hope you'll be listening every time and even have a pen or a pencil handy and even take notes in the margin of your Bible or jot down questions. If you have questions to write in, then please do so. We'll try to answer every single one of them. In the meantime, write for this booklet, The Real Jesus. You might find out a great deal about Jesus Christ you never knew before. While you're at it, request this booklet on What is the True Gospel. The booklet, What is the True Gospel? The one on the real Jesus and the plain truth. They're all free of charge, no price. We'll get it in the mail to you as quickly as we receive your letter. There's never any bill to follow. We would like to know the call letters of the station to which you're listening, the name of this radio station, and then we'll get your plain truth in the mail as quickly as we can.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.